The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I am Avra Lewis with the North Carolina Reading Service, and for the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Essence Magazine. The first article is titled, Susan L. Taylor, A Life of Meaning and Purpose for Our 55th Anniversary, the magazine's longest-serving editor-in-chief, sits down with her mentee, journalist and author, Asha Bandeli, to discuss mental health and our children and what we are called to do. Editor's note, this article discusses child suicide. If you are experiencing distress or know someone who is, you or they can dial or text 988 24 hours a day, every single day of the year. A trained counselor will be available to provide confidential support and assistance. You are not alone. Question. What do you want to leave everyone who reads this with most? Susan Taylor responds, What I so wish for us to know is that we have everything we need to heal our children and ourselves. We can end the tragedy of Black child suicide. We need only the collective will. We can deflect any weapon formed against us. Despite the poverty and loss, we remain the most well-resourced and educated population of African Americans. Our foremothers and forefathers had faith, unshakable determination, and love during the hardest of times. Let's hold fast to that history and multiply that faith, determination, and love by the generosity and grace we have needed in our lives. If every able Black adult were to give just a little from their overflow, a $10 or $25 monthly gift to CARES, we would be able to sustain and grow our work. I know we can secure all of our children. I know, working together, that we can end Black child suicide. I am so excited to see what we can transform together as we commit to moving ourselves and our community forward. The next article is titled, The Eternal Grace of Patti LaBelle, Music's Most Enduring Icon, continues to break barriers, build empires, and chase platinum dreams. How does one properly prepare for an interview with the Patti LaBelle they call their mama? Of course. And that's exactly what I did as I prepared to speak with the legendary entertainer on the eve of her 81st birthday, which was on May 24th to be exact. The fact that she'd even agreed to the interview in the midst of her birthday celebrations and the Queen's tour, which also includes Chaka Khan, Gladys Knight, and Stephanie Mills, and concludes in October 2025, speaks volumes about who she is and the empire she's been able to build. Because, one, the show must go on, and two, Patti LaBelle will always be the classiest of acts. But back to my preparation. I wanted to learn about my mother's first memory of the woman who would become one of her favorite artists. Where was she when she first heard Patti LaBelle sing? How did she feel? What was the song of hers she'd heard on the radio? As I rattled off questions, my mother's responses were exact and precise. She recalled the revolutionary spirit of Patti LaBelle and the Bluebells, the group that broke boundaries with their space-age costumes and avant-garde performances in the 1970s. Mama knew right away they were ahead of their time. And, of course, how could she forget the 1974 hit Lady Marmalade? Younger fans may be familiar with the version of the song from the 2001 movie Moulin Rouge. It was re-recorded by Christina Aguilera, Little Kim, Maya, and Pink. But make no mistake, we have Miss Patti LaBelle to thank for the original. It was a hit, just like the New Age version, and it solidified LaBelle as the queen she still is. Then there's the millennial in me. I was first introduced to LaBelle in her scene-stealing turn as Dwayne Wayne's mother, Adele Wayne, on A Different World over the course of several seasons. Though she wasn't a main character, her presence was memorable, bringing warmth, humor, and peak Black mom energy to one of the most revered television shows in Black entertainment history. And who better than her to go toe-to-toe on screen with another icon, Diane Carroll, who played Whitley's mama. It was a masterclass in Black excellence and elegance. As for my Gen Z niece, she knows her as the pie lady whose sweet potato confections became a viral sensation. It was a simple pivot, but one that reintroduced LaBelle to a new generation as her pies flew off the shelves. Three versions of Patti, speaking to three versions of the essence woman. One might even say that the multi-generational appeal of Patti LaBelle tells the story of American music itself. I love being known for different things because I have been in this business for 65 years, says LaBelle, with obvious delight. Our conversation comes as Essence celebrates its 55th anniversary. LaBelle's connection to the magazine spans decades. Not only has she graced the cover of our magazine, but she was among the performers at the inaugural Essence Festival in 1995. Sharing the stage with Luther Vandross, B.B. King, Frankie Beverly and Maze, Mary J. Blige, Boys to Men, and Aaliyah, a pantheon of Black music royalty. Many of those luminaries are no longer with us, a reality that weighs on LaBelle's heart. Whenever I wake up in the morning, I thank God because it's not guaranteed that we will live as long as we want to live, she reflects. Many of us from the first Essence Festival are no longer here, and they were all my good friends. But if time is precious, it's also a reminder that through her own grace and strength, she is still standing all of these years later. And yes, that's a reason to be thankful indeed. While Black does not crack, per se, of course I have to ask the question that we all want to know. How does she keep it all together? And always so regally. I never want to leave the house in sneakers, jeans, or sweatsuits, she says, describing her daily approach to presentation. I love people in those particular items because they look great, but I just don't feel presentable if I'm dressed in jeans or sweatsuit or sneakers. This attention to her appearance reflects deeper values instilled by her parents. That's the way my father was, she explains, and my mom, a fashionista, was just dressing all the time or representing all the time. LaBelle maintains this standard, opting for kitten heels over the towering platforms of her younger days, no more 5 or 6 inches at 81, she says, laughing. I'm not banging like that. Yet, she still makes sure she has on a little bit of makeup, a lip, and maybe shades before stepping out, always looking like I'm going to go on stage. Speaking of the stage, LaBelle possesses something that can't be bottled, packaged, or replicated, an unwavering sense of self that has carried her through 65 years in the entertainment industry. I'll be 81 tomorrow, and just being able to still be relevant or to just be able to stand up and talk in my right mind, I am every day thanking God because it's a blessing, she says, her gratitude palpable and a powerful refrain. I woke up this morning and I am healthy. Though LaBelle's 4-octave range and emotional depth are undeniable, the secret to her longevity goes beyond her talent. It's rooted in an authenticity that has guided every decision throughout her career, from her famous sequined gown to her wisely chosen business ventures. It's important to note that her business acumen was developed over decades of navigating an industry that wasn't always kind to black women. But early in her career, LaBelle benefited from having trustworthy management, first through a manager and later through her ex-husband. A lot of times you marry your managers, or you have them as your family member, or it's cousin who's managing you. And a lot of times you just get jacked up, she reflects. But my ex-husband was very honest, so he kept everything together. Even so, learning to protect her own interests sometimes meant making difficult choices. When Steven Spielberg offered her the role of Shug Avery in The Color Purple, she turned it down due to personal comfort levels with certain scenes. He told me, well, there will be some kissing. A man, yes, but a woman also. While she acknowledges it was just acting and that fears about public perception influenced her decision, she doesn't regret it. Although it really shouldn't matter because you are acting. There are some small-minded people. So I said, I'm not going to take that chance. These early experiences of trusting her instincts, even when it meant passing on opportunities, helped shape the confident artist she became. Her Gemini nature, she says, makes her very spontaneous, but that's wisdom in her choices. I don't plan very many things, she admits, and things do happen because God put them in my way. That spiritual foundation has been crucial, especially given the personal heartbreaks she's endured. LaBelle lost 3 sisters before they reached age 44, a reality that gives weight to every birthday she celebrates. My sisters all died so early, 3 sisters, and I am still standing, she says quietly. Of course, Prayer is in my life every second of every day. I don't take anything for granted. This perspective on mortality and blessing doesn't make her morbid. Instead, it fuels her continued ambition. Decades later, she's still recording music and harboring dreams of achieving what has eluded her throughout her decorated career. Platinum albums and platinum music. I really want that, she says. I have never had that. I've had gold, but I need some triple platinum. That would make me so happy. And at 81, I know I can still get it. Her optimism about future success speaks to something essential about LaBelle's character. She's never been one to rest on past achievements. She's always pushing forward, always believing in possibilities. This drive helped her conquer fears that once held her back, and the transformation from a fearful young woman to someone willing to take on Dancing with the Stars in her 70s illustrates this growth. It really scared me because I'm not a dancer by any means, she says about the experience. But afterward, so many women and men came up and said, God, you gave us so much encouragement to try to do things that we think we can't do. This willingness to embrace challenges has become part of her legacy. Most people block their blessings, she says. I used to, but I don't block them anymore. I try everything. Just because you're in your 70s doesn't mean you shouldn't try Dancing with the Stars or The Masked Singer. Anything that somebody else can do, you can too. Her definition of essence woman aligns perfectly with this philosophy of life. The essence woman is very, 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 very well put together, she says. Classy, mothers, grandmothers, a go-getter woman. I consider myself an essence woman because I am a go-getter. And I'm going to try most things that come my way. Though we couldn't have put it better ourselves, it feels even more special coming from Miss Patty, especially during a milestone year for our magazine and brand, which has inspired and will continue to inspire past, present, and future generations of Black women. Next on her agenda, Essence Festival of Culture this July in New Orleans, of course, as Essence celebrates 55 years of chronicling Black excellence. Patti LaBelle is the perfect embodiment of the magazine's mission all these years later. So it feels like a full circle moment to have her back on our stage decades after her first appearance. She shares our enthusiasm. I am happy to be coming back, she says simply. 8 decades in, Patti LaBelle represents the full spectrum of Black womanhood, the artist, the entrepreneur, the survivor, the family matriarch, and the eternal optimist who still believes her biggest achievements lie ahead. I left our conversation inspired not only by what she has endured and achieved, but also by her still bright future. As she turns 81 years young, we can't wait to see what her next chapter has in store. As always, we'll be there cheering her on. The next article is titled Black by Design. Pamela Macklin, Essence's former fashion director, called together a group of extraordinary Black designers known and emerging for a photo shoot celebrating Susan L. Taylor's commitment to providing space and place for Black creatives. We came across Waters and Borders, Arriving Early with the Sun, for Susan A.L. Taylor's first ever solo cover shoot, which took place at a studio on the edge of New York Hudson's River. To enter was to set foot on holy ground. We were three generations of Black women together, holding space for all of Black women who were not. We were the history of our sisters' strength and resolve and their art and beauty. We were the timelessness of a magazine and a muse that had been a movement in our lives. Essence is celebrating its 55th year of service. Most businesses today survive at best 18 years. Black-owned businesses are shuttered 8 out of 10 times that. Essence has defied that statistic so many times over is a testament to the product it offers, but equally, it's a testament to how it makes that offering. Susan Taylor's legacy was greater even than the words, the images, and the commitment to journalism that held its gaze on Black women and on the Black community. What powered the content was all about the world in which that content could take its form. Black creatives still mostly closed out of their very industry we provided inspiration for were finally welcomed in. It was routine for people to stop by the office and ask an editor to take a peek at their work. Routine for them to connect with Susan as she traveled the country. Of course, not every artist offering made it to the pages of Essence. Many were still developing their je ne sais quoi, but every artist had an opportunity to be seen, heard, and considered. They had a fair shot, an achingly beautiful rarity in the fashion industry. Susan scouted me when I was with Bendales, says Pamela Macklin, a seasoned industry creative and educator who served as Essence's fashion director from 1999 to 2004. Henry Bendel was an iconic Fifth Avenue luxury shopping destination founded in 1895. Susan gave me the opportunity to work at a Black company with Black women for the first time in my life, Macklin continues. She encouraged me to reimagine fashion for Black women, insisting that the pages were aspirational, inclusive, and reflective of the gorgeous range of Black women in color, size, style, and economics. In an industry defined by elitism, that too was a first. Many years ago, I was speaking with the late pioneering bridal gown designer John Weston, Susan says. He noted then how few Black designers owned their own brands. His disbelief was how we could have picked all that cotton but reaped none of its reward. It's a question that still hangs in the air. It takes precious little to thwart the dreams of an entrepreneur who is building and creating in a world where laws and their administration are abstracts to one group and high fences to another. Black people are half as likely to be approved for business loans as white people, even when our credit scores rank significantly higher. I never wanted to contribute to an effort that made Black women look good on the outside while still feeling bad on the inside, says Susan. We deserved both. This has always been her mantra. We have to intentionally buy Black our goods and services, keeping our dollars circulating among us, Susan says. If we didn't know that, we have to know it now. In this difficult period of retrenchment, we can no longer spend ourselves into debt, financing the very system that dismissed and would erase us. Black independence in economics, in art, in the very way we breathe is the way forward. That belief was the beating of the heart inside Pamela, who suggested we feature all black designers for this story, an idea less of a concept than a covenant. The designs you see in these pages are here because of the thoroughness of their beauty, their colors and flow, their imagination and whimsy. They inspire and invite us not only to style what we wear, but who we be. The designs are in celebration of the beauty, vastness, and unmatched talent of black creatives, Pamela states. They are the sons and daughters, once the children of someone who believed in them loudly and proudly, enough for them to turn their roots into wings and soar. They are the adults whom all of our children deserve a chance to grow into. They are black by design. Credits. Deepest gratitude is offered to Essence's Michelle Gee, who opened the door to a most incredible collaboration. Michelaine Thomas, who captured the beauty and power of Susan and the day so exquisitely, and the dedicated Essence team of journalists, artists, creatives, and coordinators. Nandy Howard, Michael Quinn, Skylar Mitchell, and all those whom we did not meet but who worked with us to produce this historic package in all its beauty and wisdom. We thank profusely every single designer who came together in under 2 weeks to make an offering to a queen. Not one said no. And from the truest place in our hearts, we thank every one of the team members who worked tirelessly to map out and produce this one-of-one portfolio. What an honor to, for a little while, live fully in the art and the love that is Essence. What an honor to turn to you, our readers, once more, and to thank each of you who has powered our reason for being for more than half a century, and to do so hoping that you, like us, remain strong, strong in the spirit. Well, we have run out of time for today's episode of Essence. We hope you enjoyed it, and be sure to listen next time. I am Avery Lewis, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Essence is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.